Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And we are Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Yes, we do.
I don't know if anyone can tell, but I'm like grinning so hard right now. I'm so
Lena
excited.
Lena's very excited.
I'm so excited.
So Lena, why are you so excited?
Because we're finally going to talk about the Miss Marvel live action TV series that is streaming now on Disney Plus. And what? Everyone should watch.
That's what we're talking about?
Yeah, man, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, shit.
Okay, hilarious.
I'm kidding. Yes, I'm so excited.
Don't act like you haven't been prepping for this episode like I have, okay? Which actually
not
you probably
have. You have.
Yeah, not as much as me, but
I've had no time.
I took copious notes. I've also rewatched the entire series. So I've watched the series twice because I'm a nerd. The podcast is called Grounded Geeks, okay? Whatever.
Geeks is in the name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay. One of our previous episodes, we've already talked about Miss Marvel, actually. We've done a podcast episode on Miss Marvel, but we did it about the comics.
Yes.
Now, this time we're talking about the TV show. So, Aman, what was your first impressions?
So, first impressions, I loved it. All right. In general, yes, I loved it. The things that I loved about it had to do, though, with the representation of the Pakistani American community without exoticizing it, you know?
Yes.
I don't know how else to phrase it. Like, everything they did, it was presented in a way that is normal. So for me, it was very familiar, and it was seeing things that are familiar in a way that I have never seen it before, you know? Mm-hmm. Even when watching like Bollywood movies, that's not actually representing a culture that I grew up in. All right. Like you and I, we've lived in Pakistan, but even when we were living there, we were kind of living this pseudo expat life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that like the kind of life that we lived was very much of a Pakistani American, Muslim American life. All right. And I think this show, at least for me, is the first time that I've seen that represented, and at least represented in a way that didn't make it like a thing.
Yes.
I mean, it's a thing in this show. It's totally a thing, but it's not like a thing.
It's not the only thing. Yeah.
But it's like, it's normal. Like the way they present Kamala's life and her family's life and the way the mosque is, you know, and that community there, they made it feel very normal.
Yeah.
And I loved. Did not love the bad guys, mostly because I didn't get it.
Yeah. We'll talk extensively about that because we both have questions and we need to hash out those questions. Yes. Similarly, in terms of my first impressions, I also loved the show, loved the representation. I know a lot of people were asking, oh, we know that South Asians, Pakistanis, Muslims are watching this show, but is anyone else? And my response to that is, who cares? So, like, I mean, literally, we have grown up our entire childhood. We have been consuming books, movies, TV shows that were created for white audiences. It was about white people for white people, you know? And I still loved many of them. I was able to find ways to relate to them. I learned about their cultures and their stories and whatever. So I'm pretty sure other people can do the same for us. And this is a great show to do that with. Like, learn some history, learn something new about new people, about probably your neighbors, you know? So love that. Love that it was for the culture. Love that it was very clear that they had writers who were Pakistani or Muslim or both, you know, and like it felt very authentic that way. And that was awesome.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, we are talking about a super niche part of America. We're not just talking about South Asian culture. We're talking about South Asian Muslim culture in America.
Yeah.
Which, like, that is the culture that I belong to. And it just made me so happy to see it represented at that very, very specific level.
Yes, exactly. The only two. So yes, I also had like, I have mixed feelings about the bad guys just because there was a lot they were trying to cover with her origin story. They made a lot of changes from the comics, but I like pretty much all the changes they made.
Yes.
To her origin story. That's one thing. Mixed feelings about the bad guys. And then there were two parts that I found completely unconvincing. And I was like, y'all messed up on this. So one,
I know what you're getting at.
I know. One, this is not like a deal breaker, but I was like, y'all had so much attention to detail for the rest of it. Why did you mess this up? And first of all, boxed gifts at Amr's wedding. What are you doing? There are no box gifts at Daisy weddings.
Yeah. No. So, it's like anytime somebody brings a boxed gift, you're like, the fuck's wrong with you?
Like, yeah, you're like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Why would you carry that?
There is one box where people put wedding cards and cash in. That is it. Anyway.
Yes.
So that was one thing. Second thing, I hated her cousins in Karachi. Worst cousins in the world. What kind of cousins leave their ABCD cousins in the middle of a city like Karachi? No, absolutely not. Okay, we know this because we, Aman, you and I are the ABCD cousins who would go to Pakistan almost every summer, spend our childhood summers there, and never once were we ever able to go anywhere alone.
Yeah, you don't, I saw that moment and I was just like, did your parents teach you nothing? Were you raised in a barn? Like, it wasn't just that I was like, the hell is wrong with these cousins?
Yeah.
All right. The problem that I had with it was that it would be considered so rude, so rude in Pakistan to do that. Like when we were living in Pakistan, if somebody from the US was coming to visit us, all right, we would have something arranged for them where they would never actually be alone unless it was in a super, super, super safe environment, like not the middle of the street.
Right.
All right. Like, okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. Karachi, I don't want to give the impression that Karachi is such a dangerous place that like, oh, you couldn't do that. But that's not the point. The point is that it's like culturally rude. It goes against these sort of host guest norms and rules.
Right. Okay. Yes. But I also don't want to sugarcoat it either. Karachi is not like Cincinnati, Ohio. Okay. Like, let's be real. It's a city of like probably more than 20 million people.
It's, I think it's about 28 million.
Yeah. And even that is probably an underestimate because the census cannot capture everyone. It's a huge city. Okay. In comparison, in case you're not familiar with like the population numbers of cities, New York City has 8 million people.
Yes.
Okay. So just to compare. So, it is not to be fucked with, the city of Karachi. That's all you need to know.
We have a cousin who got mugged 14 times at gunpoint while he lived there.
Multiple cousins who've been mugged. But yeah. Oh,
no. The particular cousin I'm thinking about, though, he got mugged so many times at gunpoint, he figured out the best way to get away without having to give up his wallet.
Yeah, it was impressive, actually. So
it is impressive.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean, we could go on about the cousins. They suck. I'm sorry.
Our cousins are awesome.
Yeah, so that's why actually I also want to bring up real quick. We cannot harp on about the cousins this long, but I also wanted to just say it made me sad because I think for many people, not all people, but like many people who are, you know, Pakistani Americans are ABCDs, you know, American born confused ACs. And then who would go back to Pakistan to visit, like the joy of those visits, a lot of it came from extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins. I think for Kamala, it was clear that like her mom was an only child So she does not have as many cousins. These are her cousins from her dad's side. I'm like, where's the rest of them? Anyway,
like from her dad's side, was it second cousin?
Yeah,
like,
no, it was from her. Clear. It was from her dad's side because they did say like Jaja's kids or something.
Oh, okay.
On my rewatch, I caught this. So, but yeah, anyway, so that part just made me like a little sad. I'm like, oh, she doesn't have that like cousin hangama magic happening there. So
it's different from the comics, I have to say.
It is different. In the comics, it was very clear that she had like this extensive family in Pakistan.
Yes.
I think it was just, they were trying to simplify things for the show.
I think so too.
Anyway. Okay. So I also want to go into other Muslim Pakistani references that we saw in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one is Amr's wedding in general, Amr and Taisha's wedding. Loved it. Loved the dance choreography, the scenes at home leading up to the wedding. Like that was so great. Like putting like Mindy on and stuff. Like that was great. Loved seeing all of that. I also really loved the conversation between Amr and his dad.
Yeah.
That
hit the feels.
It was very sweet. It was very like, that is such a, and like him helping him put his little Sherwani vest thing on.
Yeah.
That is such like a Pakistani thing to do, you know?
Yes.
Like that would be the moment you would have a conversation like that.
Yeah. At the same time though, I was thinking, I was like, where's everybody else?
Well, you know what? It was different for us versus my husband's family, because like for us, it's like our family, we make a big deal of someone helping you to put on your wedding, helping the groom put on his wedding Sherwani thing.
Yes.
It's like a thing, right? In our family.
It's a thing. Exactly.
And
like there's pictures.
For my husband, he was actually just alone in a hotel room of like just like putting it on. Yeah. And dressing himself. And it was like, just, and it was like not really a thing. So I think it depends on his family. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's like that's an R family thing.
Yeah, I don't know if is it an R family thing or is it a Bihari thing? I'm pretty sure it's a Bihari.
Maybe it's a Bihari thing.
So just to give a little bit of background, all right, everybody in all of like the Indian subcontinent, all right, yes, there is a broader culture that exists, but then there's also like these microcultures that exist within every province and within every part of every province. Mm-hmm. And Lena and I, our family came from Bihar and moved to Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to coming to America.
Yeah.
So it was interesting for me to be like, oh, this is not a normal thing. Fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm, for sure. So that was great. Loved all of that. Another thing, which I loved, and this was also in the comics, is the depiction of mosques and like the mosque community and the imam too. Loved that he was like this hilarious old man imam. Like, I don't know. Like, it's funny. Like, their imams come in all shapes and sizes. And I like this one. So,
yeah.
And his vibe in general. And they threw in all these kind of short scenes where, like, for example, in the finale episode when Bruno and Kamran are running from damage control and they like get into the mosque and Nakia's like, why are you here? You know, like, this is the worst place to be. And he's like, why aren't places of worship provide sanctuary. Yeah. And she's like, this is a mosque in America. We probably have the sanitation department surveilling us too, you know? And there were so many awesome one-liners, and a lot of them came from Nakia, where it's just like recognizing the discrimination, the bullshit, you know, that a lot of that, like, the Muslim American community, quite frankly, has put up with for 20 plus years. And even like, there was one really quick scene where Nakia and Kamala are in class, the bell rings, and clearly they just had history class. And Nakia's like, we spent 6 months on the Roman Empire, but 6 minutes on the Persian Empire. Like, this is ridiculous. Loved that.
Like, that also just, sorry, I'm going to take a small detour here, which also really pisses me off. All right. Because the Roman Empire, much of their governmental systems were actually based on systems established by the Persian Empire.
Yeah.
All right. Like, our legal code, all right, originates, the common law system, all right, we attribute it to Rome, but they adopted it and modified it from what existed in the Persian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking preach,
man. Yeah, that's right. Fucking preach, man. Like, yeah, exactly.
I took a class in college called Ancient and Current Near East History. Mm-hmm. All right. We had one professor teaching ancient Near East, Middle Eastern history, you know, all the Sumerians and then blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then there was a cutting point where then a different professor took over. And you know what was in the gap that they didn't cover?
What?
The fucking Crusades.
Oh my God.
You know why I took that class? I took that class for one reason and one reason only. I wanted to learn more about the Crusades, like in an in-depth, like college mm-hmm. class level way. The fact that they skipped it over, I was like, are you fucking shitting me? That's I was so pissed off. I was so pissed, especially since it was too late for me to drop the class at that point.
That sucks, man. See, yeah. This is why, also slight tangent, like I really enjoy learning and reading about history and reading like even historical fiction, quite frankly, because I've learned more about from books like that than I have from a lot of my classes in school. But it's because that's when I enjoy reading it, because I realize how much we were not taught in school.
Yes.
Like how absolutely. Much of the world was just ignored. So yeah.
And ignored in school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also one more quick shout out to Nakia. Loved her like little monologue about like wanting to wear the hijab and everything. Yes. That was a very lovely, sweet moment.
Something that rings true for a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah.
For a lot of women being yeah. not a woman and not having had to think about that choice.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. it struck me as very accurate based on the conversations that I have had with yes. friends of mine who have worn a hijab, not worn a hijab, gone back and forth.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I don't know. It seemed very genuine. Like yeah. that seemed like a monologue that came from one of the writers who lived it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And what did you think in general of Nakia's character?
Oh, I thought she was fantastic. Loved her.
At first I wasn't liking her as much, but by the end of the show, I really, really liked her. Because I don't know, like, I guess the way she's depicted in the comics, it is still like the core of her is still there.
Yes.
But it was like definitely like a different sort of vibe to her in the live action one. I don't know. I need to reread some of the comics to kind yeah. of like see how I feel about it. But
yeah,
just the core, that like feistiness is still there, which is right. great. And I really like that. So
yeah,
I think some people had like issues with how she's depicted, but
what kind of issues?
I don't know. I just remember,
I will fight them. Who are these assholes? Oh my gosh,
I don't know. But anyway, all her scenes, loved them. Also loved that a show about Muslim Americans, Muslim Pakistani Americans, did not have one mention of 9/11.
I feel like it was implied.
I mean, it's of course implied, right? Especially when we're talking about mosques being surveilled and whatever, things like, we know why, right?
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be said, because quite frankly, it's been more than 20 years. This is our reality now as a community and yeah. what we've had to live with. I just hate that. Like, when I was in journalism school, mm-hmm. I remember at the beginning, like I was in my reporting class and like the 9/11 anniversary was coming up and people were pitching stories. And someone basically said, if you have anything about Muslims, that's great. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, Jesus. What is it? Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I was like, are you serious right now? Like, it's always been this thing that's yeah. associated with Muslims and whatever. And I appreciate that. Like, not once was it uttered. And like, we get it. We know whatever, it's there. It's like looming, but right. it didn't need to be said. It didn't need to be talked about because it wasn't related to the plot of the story.
And you know, it wasn't related to the plot, but actually now that you mention it, the more I'm thinking about it, just to put it in perspective, none of the main characters mm-hmm. were alive when 9/11 yeah. happened. For characters like Nakia, for Kamala, for Bruno,
yeah,
for all these kids, having mosques being under constant and over surveillance,
mm-hmm.
all right, is a reality of their lives from the day they were born.
Yeah.
All right. And they don't remember what it was like in the pre-days. I was very, very young, but I was still alive. It was not something I had to worry about. Right. I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about, you know, privacy and hacking and the government tracking people on their phones and whatnot. And he was like, yeah, that's why I'm on Signal. That's why I've got Signal or Telegram or, you know, these encrypted messaging services. And I was like, I have to think about whether I want to download these, first of all, and two, whether I would actually want to use them exclusively, because messaging in a way that completely falls off the radar would be a point to make of making me suspicious to somebody who is trying to follow me around or surveil what I'm up to. You know, if I try too hard to drop off the radar, that is in and of itself suspicious, you know?
Yeah.
And, and the fact that I have to think about whether me taking steps to protect my own privacy in this digital world is something that would raise suspicions. That's something I have to live with specifically because I'm a Muslim American of South Asian origins, like very, very specifically because of that. Like, and that's, when you think about it, that's sad. It's a sad way to process the world. I completely avoided doing certain kinds of research when I was younger because I was like, I don't want that on my browsing history. I'm interested in the subject in a variety of subjects in an academic way, trying to understand things, but I was like, you know what, I'm just going to stay away from that because I don't want to get picked up by the FBI.
Yeah. I mean, that is like a very real sort of sense of paranoia, you know, that a lot of Muslims, Americans have had, do have. Yeah. Et cetera.
I mean, is it paranoia though, if they really are after you?
No. Yeah. Sorry. That's not what I meant. My point is like, you know, it's something that's like makes people look over their shoulder all the time.
Yes.
Like,
so all the time.
Yeah.
And I attest to that personally.
And I think that's, yes, this show is about like superheroes and powers and magic and whatever, but so much of that realness was kind of interlaced with it. Like in the finale episode, when Kamran is kind of like losing control of his powers, it's like pulsating out of him everywhere. Then Kamala kind of creates this dome around both of them. And he says something to her that's like, you know, they're never going to accept us for who we are. And like, they're never going to think we're normal after this. Like, obviously in this show, it's referring to their superpowers, but it's also referring to them being brown and Muslim.
Yeah.
And Kamala saying like, there is no normal. First of all, that was a great reference to the comics because there's like a whole section called No Normal, but also like you were saying, like these are kids who were born after 9/11.
Yeah.
Like they've never experienced that pre 9/11 normal. Like it's never been normal having your mosque raided by the FBI and whatever all the time. It's not normal, but it is normal. So, and then also one quick point I wanted to make, like I had this thought while rewatching it, but I think, so we know in the comics, Kamran is like a full-on villain. He sucks.
Yes.
Kamala defeats him. We never hear from him again. So, which sucks. I was sad, but whatever. It's all good. Like, dude needed to go. In this show, it was not so black and white. It was very much, they put him in the gray. And I think the show didn't want to fully turn Kamran into a villain because that's what always happens to brown Muslim guys on screen. And they have been criminalized so much in real life and in like on screen that I appreciate this show kind of taking a different direction. Like we see Kamran has made his way to Karachi. He's now, you know, being aided by the Red Daggers, but we might see him again, you know, like it just, his story does not seem like done.
It's not over for sure.
Yeah. So for sure. I thought that was, I liked that direction that they took with that. Cause it is very different seeing a brown guy turn into a villain in a comic book versus on screen. It has a different impact, I think, on viewers. So
agreed.
Yeah.
Good observation.
Thank you. The other Muslim referencing that we have to talk about is jinns.
Jinns, absolutely.
So, okay. Oh my God, Aman, there's so much to unpack. So
can I just start off with Kamala's explanation to Bruno about what jinns are?
Yeah, yes, that was so good.
I think she was like, so you know how you grew up with ghost stories as a kid?
Yeah.
I grew up with jinn stories, except the difference is that jinn are real.
And so, they're so much scarier.
And they're so much scarier.
Yeah. She was like, there's ghost stories and there's jinn stories, and the jinn stories are way scarier because they're real. Like, so yeah, like that was perfect. Perfect explanation. That is exactly how we grew up with that explanation too. And
yes,
like I feel like as kids, we heard ghost stories, and then whenever someone wanted to tell a jinn story, you were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Just like, whoa, like, hold on. Like, are all the children out of the room? Like, you know, it was a lot.
I guess we need to start off with, what did you think about the change in Ms. Marvel's power origins coming from this place of her being a jinn, basically?
So first of all, I love that her origin story is entirely about her family and ancestry, right?
Yes.
And they use that as an opportunity to also talk about partition, a real life event and one of the largest, you know, events of human migration in history ever.
Yes.
So loved that. I thought it was super interesting when they were like, okay, let's make Kamala's great grandmother a
jinn. Yeah.
She came from the Noor dimension. Super cool. Naturally falls in love with Fawad Khan because he's beautiful and offering her parathas. Like, why wouldn't you? So that, I don't know. I liked it. I thought that was interesting. So what's thrown me for a loop now is that they've pretty much said and confirmed that she's also a mutant. So
yeah.
Okay. This is what I don't understand. Like, we need to talk about this. Okay. So because before in episodes 1 through 5, this whole time I thought, okay, Kamala is part jinn, so she always had some sort of Noor in her, that energy source in her, and the bangle is what unlocked it.
Yes, that's what I thought too.
That's what I thought too. And then,
somehow makes it possible for her to utilize what she already has inside of her.
Right. But then of course, like, why wouldn't the same thing happen with Kamala's grandmother?
Yeah.
Who's half jinn, and her mom, who's a quarter, you know, and
even more jinny.
Yeah. Or like with Kamala's brother, you know? And
yeah. So, well, they didn't put the bangle on.
Well, no, but her nani did.
Remember, she
put it on her when she was a little girl. Nothing happened. We don't know if her mom ever, I assume her mom has never put it on because her mom always thought her own mother was like cuckoo, whatever.
Yes. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
So clearly, you know, the show writers had to be like, okay, we have to show there's something extra different about Kamala.
Right.
Which means like there's some sort of mutation in her genetic. And that is actually what the Red Dagger say. Again, upon my rewatch, they said that, sorry, I'm consulting my notes. They said they think it's due to Kamala's genetics that she can shape the Noor. So, okay. But then what's going on with Kamran? How did he get, like, he got his powers because his mom
died
and said Kamran into the air. And then somehow
they showed the little like whooshing.
Yeah. But like, what is that? I don't understand. Why does he have powers at all?
I mean, that would be from then, you know, season 2 explanation, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. There's got to be some explanation for that, because it's not like the clandestines, meaning the bad people, they didn't have powers.
They didn't have powers
like Kamala's.
No, not like Kamala's, but they had some kind of like stuffses going on.
They fought good.
They fight good, and they also had like, they seemed really strong.
No, they weren't though. Like, I mean, there was nothing to indicate super strength, super speed, nothing like that.
I mean, that one guy had a whip sword thing that he wore as a belt. Like they would like whip out.
Yeah, but that could be any sort of like, you know, Stark technology or whatever, you know, like it was not, it was not clear to me that they had any powers of their own. That's why I'm also wondering what the hell did the bangle do to Aisha with the first time she put it on? She put it on and she had that same reaction where her eyes glowed and she saw something. We don't know what she saw. And something happened to her.
I think if putting on the bangle probably would have worked on the other clandestines as well, if they'd had the opportunity to put the bangle on.
That's true.
That was that. Maybe. I definitely took that from that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's just confusing to me because they were also with the Jinns, like they've explained, right? Like they live in a different dimension, which is also similar to how they kind of explained it in the Quran too.
Yes.
That it's sort of like they live in a parallel universe to ours.
Kind of.
That's kind of the explanation I've always been given.
I mean, the explanation. So in the Quran, at least the Quranic origin of Jinns, and there are many different kinds of origins. It does exist in not just in Muslim mythology, but also in broader, you know, mythologies as well. Mm-hmm. But in the Quran, the way it is that God made jinn before he made humans. Mm-hmm. And whereas humans were made of mud and clay, jinn are made of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Quran, the jinn are very much described as just like, they're just like you. Like they walk, it's like they walk around amongst us. We just can't see them.
Exactly. That's what I mean by like a parallel universe kind of.
Yes. You know? Or like a dimension shift.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Maybe they exist in a fifth dimension.
And I've been told, like you were saying, they're just like us, but in the sense like there's good jinn and bad jinn. Like there's good people and bad people. You know,
exactly.
Like, you know.
Exactly.
We're all kind of gray in this, not black and white. So
yes.
Yeah.
But yes, every family also does have a jinn story.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So do we. Our family does too.
A jinn story and a partition story, all that. So yeah, we'll go back to her powers because there's more to discuss there. But
yeah,
want to talk about partition.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very, obviously there's only so much you can fit in 6 episodes, but so it was like a scratching the surface level kind of
very simplified
explanation. It was very simplified. They did a great job of not depicting one group better or worse than the other. It was mainly like the British fucked up, which they did. That is an undeniable fact. You can't just like be like, okay, here's a line that we've drawn in the ground and we're going to peace out in 6 weeks. And yeah, that's what happened. So
basically.
Yeah. So after ruling this Indian subcontinent for 200 years, I just think that's a very important fact to remember. 200 years. There were entire generations of Indians and Brits who were born and raised on the Indian subcontinent under British rule. They lived and died under British rule.
Yes.
200 years. That is a long time. To give you context. So yeah, partition happened in 1947. This year is going to mark the 75th anniversary. We're not even like halfway through of what was British colonial rule.
Yeah.
So yeah. So it's a mess. It's still a mess. And it's still causing problems, causing violence. There's a lot of nationalistic kind of related violence happening. And yeah, so I think the show did a great job of using these small scenes to depict the struggles that families were having. Like when the great grandfather Hassan is like saying, like, no one will buy my roses from me. No one will sell milk to my wife because we're Muslim. And just showing one way that the division was occurring between groups of people. So I thought that was really well done because again, this is like a kids quote unquote show. And there's only so much you can show with partition, which is, there's been books and books written about partition, right. And it still feels like there's so much we don't know and understand about it. So,
yes. So one thing that I was super offended about in terms of the depiction of partition was that they didn't mention the Sharif report even once.
Yes. Can you please explain to our listeners, what is the Sharif report?
So in the 1910s, all right, a mere 30 or so years before partition actually happened, most Indians were still very much talking about, and you see this in news articles and op-eds and whatnot from that time period, were very proud to be British and to be citizens of the British Empire, and for India, the larger India, to be the jewel of the empire.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then it was after that, pretty much in like the 30s, that this movement started of Indians wanting to be independent from the British. All right.
Yeah. I would say a lot of it also got started like after World War II, like after Indians had been basically forced to fight for the British in World War II, a lot of them were like, you know, I think we deserve our freedom. So
That was another, that was a part of the impetus for that was World War II itself. And at the time though, you know, and you see this also in Gandhi's rhetoric of like, of how India should be one, should be a single country independent from British rule.
Yeah.
And however, a lot of the rhetoric had to do with this sort of Hindu nationalistic rhetoric, which in South Asia, in the broader Indian subcontinent, there are more than just Hindus there.
Right.
And there are two reports, and the British were also very much like, when we leave, it's just going to be a united India, all right? And there were two major reports, the Pirpur report and the Sharif report, that basically showed that the various races that were running the different provinces were carrying out a lot of discrimination against Muslims. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot, there was a lot of atrocities as well as discriminations happening against Muslims. And the Sharif report was actually the report of an investigation led by our great grandfather, and they were able to prove and show in detail the specific discriminations and abuses that Muslims were facing in Bihar under the different Congress, under the Congress that ruled there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And this report is what went to the Governor General Linlithgow. All right. And that is what convinced him that no, when we leave, we need to set up a separate country for Muslims to live in, because otherwise they will be discriminated against. So the Sharif report is a big, big part of why there even is a Pakistan.
Yeah.
And why partition happened.
Was the data, I guess, collected in the Sharif report specifically only from Bihar, like focusing on Bihar?
Yes. Yeah. It was very specifically focused on Bihar. The different Muslim leagues in the different provinces all put out similar kinds of reports.
Yeah.
But the one coming, the Sharif report that came out of Bihar had like, it wasn't just stories, collection of stories of things that people had faced. It was a lot more definitive and robust in terms of the evidence provided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is what convinced the British that creating a separate country called Pakistan was the right thing to do.
Yeah. I wish in general there was more mention / documentation of the Sharif report and anywhere. Like, but yes. I have read, like, fairly recently read a book entirely about partition and it never mentions the Sharif report.
Really?
Yeah.
Because like, every time I've read something, there's almost always a mention of the Sharif report.
Yeah.
And most scholars of South Asian history, especially during this partition period, are very familiar with the role that the Sharif report played.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, I have been looking now for a few years, rather casually, for an actual copy of the Sharif Report, and I have yet to find it.
Dang. We should.
I know.
We should embark on this adventure together and try to figure that out.
So we should.
That would be amazing.
I have a few next steps in my investigation.
We'll debrief on this later. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so because of that, I'm not surprised that this, you know, Marvel Disney Plus show did not mention the Sharif Report. Like, it was very like just barely scratching the surface kind of telling about Partition. But in general, I am also just happy about to see a depiction of Partition. That's the first time I've really seen it outside of like, you know, the movie Gandhi and stuff. Like, and
there was actually an excellent episode of Doctor Who a couple of years ago that was entirely a Partition episode, but it was basically covering this like singular love story.
Oh my gosh. Good on the Brits for doing that.
It was
since y'all started
absolutely brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Oh, yes.
Nice. Okay. Cool. All right. Now, last things that I just want to talk about still are, I mean, we kind of covered this already. I had like a list of 7 questions. I think we've covered most of them. Let's just go through them very quickly. Now, some of these questions do not have answers right now, and I hope they will be answered either in the Marvel's movie or I'm really hoping a second season of Ms. Marvel. There better be a second season.
Seriously.
So one, where exactly did the bangle come from? What are its origins? I recall, again, I noticed this in my rewatch, but when they showed that flashback scene of the clandestines like digging through rubble trying to find this bangle, they found one and they said, the man from the temple said we need 2 bangles to go back home, but maybe one will do, you know, like we won't be able to find the second one. The British have already looted this place twice over. And so someone, again, thank you to like all the people on TikTok for noticing all these things. But someone noticed that they showed like an overhead bird's eye view shot of them. And they were standing on the ground was some sort of carving of what looked like 10 rings.
It was actually not just a carving. It was like straight up the logo of the 10 rings.
Yeah, it was the logo of the 10 rings.
Yeah.
So we know, we are pretty sure there's got this bangle has to have some sort of connection to the 10 rings, to Shang-Chi and the 10 rings and stuff. So
yeah,
that's more to come, hopefully, on that.
Yes. Okay? I keep thinking, though, that first of all, the 10 rings that they showed in Shang-Chi, I was like, these are more like 10 bangles or 10 bracelets.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Are we looking at bracelet number 11?
That's true. Also, I do need to give a shout out to our father. So I watched the finale with our parents, and which was one of the most wholesome, amazing experiences ever. Loved it. We had so much fun. But Papa, being who he is he was just so funny. Literally in the middle of the show, at some point they were talking about the bangle, and Papa was like, by the way, that's not a bangle, that's a bracelet. And he's right, you know? He's right. A bangle is fully encircled. You don't open. There's no clasp to it. There's no clasp. Through your hand. Yes. And a bracelet has a clasp, which is what this has. So the fact that it's been referred to as a bangle throughout the whole show, you're wrong. I'm sorry, guys. So yeah. Anyway, it was just funny because like one, had not thought of it at all. Two, it is not really like a deal breaker or anything. But also, Papa's right. Like, you know, like he's right about it. So that's great. Anyway,
really need to tell me a lot more about what happened.
I need to give you a whole. It was really funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question: why were the clandestines exiled? I know that maybe there is no proper explanation, like, or maybe they just don't plan on explaining that, the writers.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be like, oh, there were just a group of djinns who were exiled. I think it's kind of important to know, why the hell were they exiled?
There was, and this is my biggest problem with the clandestines, is that like there was no fucking backstory or buildup.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like old school Marvel villains all over again.
Yeah.
Which like Do you even remember any of them? No, because they were just kind of weird reflections of the hero. Right. You know, they, I mean, we didn't get a good Marvel villain until what? Killmonger?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, what came out first? Spider-Man Homecoming or Black Panther?
I don't even remember.
Either way, like Killmonger, Vulture, yeah. Right? Michael Keaton's
yeah.
bad guy character. I mean, Thanos, I mean, and like,
yeah,
that's kind of it. Those are all the bad guys that were like distinctive and like,
yeah.
had half.
You know, I actually
feel like with the clandestines, it was just like back in that same fucking old school Marvel bullshit because they had no good backstory given. There were so many holes in their backstory.
Yeah. I feel like they got so busy with building Kamala's origin story very yes. beautifully, by the way. Just from I'm going to go on this tangent real quick, but like from her costume being made in Pakistan, mm-hmm. the name coming from her dad, kind of like explaining to her what her yes. name Kamala means. Beautiful. Loved that. It was so good. The way her necklace breaks and like the calf letter that
yeah.
spells out Kamala, when you turn it sideways, it looks like a lightning bolt, you know, like
right.
perfect. And I also just love, like, is this the first superhero where like their family, the superhero's family knows superhero identity? Yes. Like, I love that because also, again, that is such a Pakistani Muslim thing. You know, it yes. would be a family involved event, you know, yes. like it would.
And everything from her hesitation to telling her family
mm-hmm.
to also the way her family finds out.
Yeah.
All right. Where she's like, I have to tell you all something.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I'm the light girl. And then her brother's like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. And she's like, yeah. Ami, you told them? It's like, actually, I only told Abu.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he listens to everything on speakerphone. So yeah. that's how I found it. I mean, like, it was just like, I loved it.
It was perfect. It was
so good.
Yeah. I was like, this is totally how it would go down.
And that is exactly how it would go down. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what were we talking about before? I don't even remember.
The bad guys, anyway. The clandestines, and their lame yeah. ass backstory.
I was saying, I feel like the writers focus so much on creating this beautiful origin story for Kamala and Ms. Marvel mm-hmm. that they really kind of unfortunately were lacking with the villain's backstory. So unless they plan on going in more detail in second season, but like now you've killed off the main villain, like Najma's dead. Yeah. So I don't
know. Yeah, seriously. I mean, maybe season two will be, you know, the Kamran show and he then gets to find out, try to discover more about what happened with his family.
And there might be more stuff with the Red Daggers.
Which also the Red Daggers, like in general, I loved all of the changes they made in the show from the comics because mm-hmm. it ended up being so much more true, I think, to the culture mm-hmm. in which Kamala Khan lives. All right. I feel like at the time Ms. Marvel, the comic book came out, there were orders from up top at Marvel to push the Inhumans and yeah. to push Inhuman characters because Marvel didn't have the rights to make X-Men movies at the time. And so mm-hmm. I think they were trying to build up that's the economic explanation for it. All right.
Yeah. yeah.
Is that they were trying to build up Inhumans and so this got pushed and, oh, we're going to call her Ms. Marvel because her favorite superhero is Captain Marvel, who used to go by Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
And
it was kind of lame.
It was.
Yeah.
It was very lame.
Yeah.
Right. But they did an excellent, excellent job of changing those things mm-hmm. to take out all of the things in the comic books that I just never could give two shits about.
Right. Like I was never feeling it. Yeah.
Yeah. I never felt it. It wasn't mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
However, I do not like what they did with the Red Daggers. All right.
Oh yeah.
In the comic books, the Red Dagger is a singular person mm-hmm. and it is Kamala's run-in with Karachi's superhero.
Yeah. Who is like Karachi's crime fighting vigilante. Yes. Yeah.
And he's like, what are you fucking doing in my turf? Girl, yeah. get out. Yeah. You know, like, you can't just show up here and not know what the hell you're doing and then start making a mess of things. Like, this is my, this is my backyard.
Yeah.
Right. And so I love that. I love that interaction. And I love that relationship that, that they had. And I always forget, the word for dagger in Urdu. It, he calls, he goes
Lal
by
Kanjir.
Lal Kanjir.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Lal Kanjir. All right. Like, I mean, that's like, that's what he goes by. All right.
Yeah.
The fact that they turned the, turned it into like an organization or some shit.
Yeah.
I was like, and then an organization with no explanation for like how they came into existence, why the fuck they even exist other
they
than to
fight why.
The
They
I
said,
mean, they exist to fight the clandestines, but they, like, you do a terrible job at it since they're all still alive.
They said, hold on, I took notes on this. They said the red daggers are there to protect people from the threats from the unseen.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, like,
so I don't know.
Paranormal activities, but you know, salvation.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
exactly.
I mean, it was poorly built out and it was poorly crafted. And it was also like Kamala just shows up and they're just like, welcome to our hideout.
Yeah.
If you've been around for a long time and you're a super secret organization, like, what the fuck?
Again,
what is going on here?
And they, the only reason they let her in is because they were kind of sort of following her around, watching her from afar, knew she was Aisha's great granddaughter. And then the guy Waleed says, oh, Aisha's story is the stuff of legends. What? How do you know about Aisha? How? No, we have no clue how they act as if she herself was like some sort of superhero. Like, did she form the Red Daggers? Who knows?
Yeah,
like, like that
did nothing. No,
didn't seem like she did that. So I don't know.
No explanation whatsoever.
It would have been cool actually if she was like Peggy Carter and like created the Red Daggers, like Peggy Carter created S.H.I.E.L.D. But like,
yeah, I mean, that would have been cool if they'd done that.
Yeah, I don't know.
They didn't.
Yeah. So next question I had was, did Aisha summon Kamala back in time to save Sana / her Nani? And how did she exactly do that? She basically, again, during my rewatch, really paid attention to this. And she is, she's been stabbed by Najma. She's like slumped against something. And she's holding a picture of herself, Hassan,
of her
and
family.
Baby Sana, of her family.
Yeah.
And she's just whispers, what you seek is seeking you, which the first time we hear that is from Hassan, who says it to Aisha. And he's like reciting Sufi poetry because that line comes from the Sufi poet Rumi. And then we also find out it's somehow inscribed on the bangle / bracelet.
Yeah, I feel like Aisha magically inscribed it.
Yes.
Onto the bracelet, not a bangle, bracelet.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I think that it was very vague, and I very much got the sense that she was trying to do something. Aisha was trying to do something, but didn't really know what she was doing or even properly how she was doing it. That
because,
is the sense that I got. And I also got the sense that she thought she was summoning Sana from the future.
Yes. Yeah.
Not Kamala. There was that moment of confusion for sure.
Because I think, again, like, this bracelet, we don't know the origins of it. There's clearly some bigger connection, something bigger going on with the 10 rings and all that, that Aisha even was sort of like out of her depth when it comes to this bracelet. So I think that's what happened. Okay. Yeah. And then next question, there's only like three more questions. So next question, how/why did the veil open when Kamala came back to her time after the flashback episode?
I mean, this shit made absolutely no sense to me.
It was,
I mean, the bracelet was very much, they knew the bracelet was going to open the doorway between dimensions. And I think they needed both bracelets to create a stable doorway.
Right.
Between the two dimensions.
Yes.
And I think that so this is something about, this is the whole, there's a whole thing in fantasy about hard magic systems versus soft magic systems. Mm-hmm. All right. What hard magic systems, it's like the reader or the watcher, whether it's a show or a book, the system is made very clear exactly what the rules are, et cetera, et cetera. The rules of magic. Mm-hmm. Whereas in soft magic systems, it's not explained very clearly. So big differences. So have like in Avatar, The Last Airbender, the whole notion of bending, that's basically a hard magic system. There are very clear rules about who can do what and why. And like, it's clear what the rules are. Whereas in Lord of the Rings, that very strongly utilizes soft magic systems. Mm-hmm. You don't know what Gandalf's powers really are or how they work. Sometimes he's able to solve a problem and show up, you know, to save the day in a white shining horse. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he's already there and he's not able to save the day.
Right.
All right. And you have like the One Ring of Power, which drives people insane, people who wield it.
Yeah.
It drives them insane. But like, why? Why is it making people invisible who wear it? You know, like it's not fully explained. You just know it's powerful.
Right.
So I feel like with this bracelet, there's very much of a soft magic system going on here.
Okay.
At least for now. Mm-hmm. All right. And here's the thing. It didn't bother me so much because I'm okay with soft magic systems as a concept.
Yeah.
So in terms of that, my theory on why the veil opened is that Aisha accidentally called Kamala back in time when she was actually trying to call Sana back in time.
Yeah.
To save
herself.
Sana.
Yeah.
All right. And in that moment, the moment in time from which Aisha called Kamala back, I think is when the bracelet super activated. Mm. And that's, I think, why in that moment, this unstable doorway opened up.
And also the whole reason why she went back in time is because like Najma stabs her bracelet.
Yes.
Or something. There's some sort of impact on the bracelet. And then
throws a knife. Blocks it with the bracelet and ka-ching, back in time, partition, history lesson.
Right. So, okay, cool. I can be down with that and hopefully get more answers as time goes on. So,
I mean, that's my theory is that stabbing onto the bracelet triggered it. And because it triggered it in that point in time, Aisha calling back whoever was wearing the bracelet back in time. It just happened to be that was the point from which she could call somebody back.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, also all of these things happening, doorway to different dimension opens up.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, and that's why when Kamala came back, she came back to the exact same point in time.
Right.
Okay. All right. So hence.
Yeah. Doorway. Yeah.
So that was my understanding of it.
Okay.
And that's the explanation I'm currently going with.
Okay. Works.
Pending more information.
I wonder then if in future, whatever movies, episodes, there might be a situation where Kamala's bracelet, like she's able to like harness the time traveling aspect of it and maybe go back in time more often to like talk to her great grandmother or whatever, something. Like, I could see that happening where she kind of figures out.
Seems unlikely, though.
Because, I mean, yeah, maybe it's unlikely. But, I mean, I don't know. If you could, like, somehow use it for time travel to specifically go back and meet your ancestors? I don't know.
I mean, I'm saying it's unlikely, not because I think your theory is incorrect.
No, because you think the writers won't take it in that direction.
No, because when Kamala first meets her great-grandmother, it's when her great-grandmother is dying, all right? If Kamala went back in time to talk to her great-grandmother, she would have had to go back in time before that moment to talk to her, which means that Aisha would have already immediately recognized her the first time.
Oh, that's true. Okay, fine.
That's why it can't, because if it was going to happen, it would have already happened.
Yeah, right.
Because time travel.
Okay. My head's hurting already. All right.
Wibbly wobbly.
Okay. So next thing, well, I was going to ask this question, but we already talked about it. And it's basically like, I still want more details about Kamran's powers. How are they different?
Yeah.
They're similar to Kamala's, but is he also a mutant? What are we trying to say here? You know? Okay. Yeah. So that's done. Hopefully we'll get more answers. Next thing we have to talk about is a post-credit scene.
Oh my now, God. Yes.
Okay. So she's lying in her bed. She looks over at her bracelet. It's doing a weird glowy thing that it hasn't done before. It's a different kind of glowy thing. And then all of a sudden she just like,
gets sucked into her closet.
And then the person who comes out, stands up from the closet, is Captain Marvel. Now, okay, question. We don't know. I feel like there's two scenarios that occurred there. One, did Kamala Khan and Captain Marvel somehow switch places and teleport or something? And that's actually Carol Danvers standing in Kamala's bedroom.
Yeah.
Or did Kamala somehow shapeshift and she looks like Carol Danvers / Captain Marvel because that happens in the comics?
That was my first thought, that is what had happened. That was my first thought.
And when I rewatched it, it is not clear from the dialogue because all that Captain Marvel says is, oh no. So like that could come from either of them.
Yes, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
Carol Danvers did not look at a mirror. All right. And so that was my first thought. But then I was like, no, they somehow switched places. All right. And the reason I think they switched places is because Carol Danvers doesn't look at a mirror and go, oh no.
Yeah.
She's looking at fan art
of her.
Yeah. Going, yeah. Oh no. What sort of like, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
All right. Like
that, why am I in a shrine dedicated to me?
Why am I standing in a children's shrine dedicated to me?
Yeah, that's true. Fine. Okay.
All right. So that's why I think they switched places.
Okay. Right?
Mm-hmm. Given the bracelets, I'm going to call it a bracelet from now on, not a bangle.
Yeah.
All right. The bracelet definitely has powers of interdimensional travel.
Yes.
So I think it's entirely possible that maybe Carol is in a different dimension and Kamala unwittingly switches places with her.
Yes. See, because this freaking bracelet has a mind of its own. What is going on? We need more answers about the bracelet.
We do. We do. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's related to the Makalan rings.
Yeah. The 10 rings.
Which I'm going to call them the 10 bangles from now on.
Sure. Go for it.
Because those were definitely not rings. They were bangles. Damn it. All right.
That's funny. Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay, we have officially, I think, covered everything in my notebook about
in your episode. Notebook.
In my notebook, yes. What did you want to cover?
I wanted to ask you, which scenes did you find struck you strongest emotionally? Like, what was the moment that made you cry? I had many moments where I teared up watching.
No, one moment in particular, and it happened even during my rewatch, is when in the finale episode, when, you know, Kamala creates that dome around her and Kamran, she tells Kamran to escape, dig some sort of hole for him in the ground. I don't understand that.
She punched a hole into the ground.
Yeah. So he escapes. The dome is now receding. And then all the people of Jersey City rush over to form a protective circle around her. And even the local cops stand between her and damage control agents. And that part really, it was perfect because even in the comics, Kamala Khan and Miss Marvel have always been, she's always been about the people of Jersey City and she's always been for them. She's always stood by them. She's always fought for them. Everything has been like for her people, for her town, her city.
Yes.
And that was just such a sweet and powerful moment. I loved that. That part made me tear up.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely an emotional moment for me as well. Yeah. And also right after Kamran says, they're never going to accept you for who you are.
Yes.
And it's like, you know what? No, they will.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. What was it for you?
There were three big ones for me.
Oh my God.
And I'm going to start with the lamest. Okay. Mm-hmm. Being the first one being when she says embiggen and actually then starts to use her powers in the way that Miss Marvel does in the comics.
Yeah.
All mm-hmm. right. That I was like, oh my God, it's finally happening. She said embiggen. I don't know why. I found that so emotional.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's like the nerd in me, the geek in me, just like gushing. Mm-hmm. All right. The second was when she puts on the costume that her mom had made for her, and she's just standing in front of the mirror, looking at herself. She's basically wearing an altered shalwar kameez.
Yeah. Right?
And that's her costume.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't know, that moment for me was like really, really powerful. I've always been a big fan of Captain America, love Captain America, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, The Flash. These are some of my favorite superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a moment where I was like, we made it. We made it, you know? It was just such an emotional moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
That like, and like, I just kept thinking like, what if I had had this when I was a kid?
I know.
All right. Mm-hmm. How would it have altered my view of myself? How would it have shaped the narrative that I have written about myself if I had seen this as a kid? And it was just such a powerful moment for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, the conversation that Kamala is having with her dad on the roof, where he then explains, like helps her come up with her name. And I hadn't even thought of this all these years we've been reading the Miss Marvel comics. Yeah. I never thought of the origin, like what the name Kamala means.
No, they talk about it in the comics, and it's in the comics. I mean, it's kind of like Kamal is like kind of means miracle mostly. And that's how they explain it in the comics, because it was the same explanation that they gave in the show too, that, you know, after Amr was born, we wanted a second child, but it took many years and we almost kind of gave up. And then you arrived and you were our little miracle. And
yes,
but they change it slightly, like, you know, they use like a synonym kind of and to Marvel, which I think still applies.
He explained that in Arabic it does mean miracle, but the way the word is used in Urdu,
he said in Arabic it means perfect.
Yeah. But you know, he's right. The way colloquially when somebody says Kamal ki baat hai, you know, he's right. It kind of does. It is used in the same way that people may say that something is a marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. No, it was beautiful.
And,
it was,
and that tie-in, I feel like that moment really captured everything that I liked about the changes that they made in the show.
Exactly.
To really pull it together and still make it all work.
Yeah.
You know? And then her reaction, I share a name with Carol freaking Danvers. Why am I only learning about this now? Like, I don't know. Just that whole interaction, the fact that it was with her dad, that he gave her, explained to her something that led her to pick the name Miss Marvel for herself.
Yeah.
All right. It made me weepy. Like literally, I did have tears streaming down my face. Aww. It was just such a touching moment for me.
Yeah. I mean, I throughout the series had my reservations, you know, we were like not convinced of the villains, all this stuff. I was a little like feeling like, man, I don't know if this storytelling is as strong as I would like it to be.
Right.
But that scene and really the finale in general just made me feel like, wow, they have stuck the landing. And
they
with this finale and the way they've wrapped up the show, it's beautiful. So,
yeah.
All right. We have to wrap up this episode because it's so freaking long. But I have, Aman, I have a fan question for you. This is a shout out to my friend Liana. But she was asking me to ask you.
Okay.
I think in our other Miss Marvel episode, when we talk about the comics, we had at one point talked about how Amr and Kamala remind us of each other because hello.
Yeah.
Like in the sense that like, you know, she has an older brother, whatever, like all this stuff. Right. Now, and you said back then that you did not really relate to the comic book Amr, but how do you feel about the TV show Amr?
He's still a lot more religious than I am.
Well, yeah, for starters. Yeah.
But his personality, I think, is quite a bit more in line with the way I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Awesome. Perfect. Well, all right. I think we literally covered anything and everything that we could about Ms. Marvel. So
I'm sure we'll come up with more things after we stop recording.
I know, for real, as per usual. But as always, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks.
We'll catch you next week. And in the meantime, you should watch Ms. Marvel if you haven't.
Yes, please do. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.